This cake tastes awesome, man.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Upwind Edinglez with Reza and Craig.
How's it going, Craig?
Very well, Reza. Good to have you here again.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
How are you feeling today?
Great.
Good. This is episode 36, and if you are a new listener, si estás escuchando por la primera vez, welcome. It doesn't matter. No importa. It doesn't matter if you're studying English to pass an exam, or to get a better job, or to get a job, or because you simply like English. Reza and I are going to help you improve your English and take it to the next level. Is that too American?
No, that sounds good to me.
You can find more podcasts at inglespodcast.com and study English free at mansioningles.com. In this episode, we have grammar for you and more clauses, continuing from last episode, episode 35, in which Reza explained clauses, sentences and phrases. We're going to speak about that a little more, and also pronunciation of good, would and would. I'll explain later. And vocabulary connected to the car. Reza, we have some feedback this week from Luca?
Luca.
What does Luca say?
Luca wrote quite a long bit of writing in Spanish, but I'm not going to read it all, because basically his main point was that he suggests we speak less Spanish. Luca, we think you may have a good point.
We yes. do. We agree.
Perhaps occasionally, from time to time, we have spoken a little bit of Spanish unnecessarily. So we're going to be keeping an eye on that, and we're trying to keep the Spanish to an absolute minimum. We do feel that occasionally to mention something in Spanish is useful, just to save time for no other reason.
Yeah, so, maybe to translate some words or vocabulary. Yeah.
Which is only to save time. That's the only reason why. So we'll keep it to a minimum. We agree with you, and we won't be speaking any more Spanish than we think is useful. What about the feedback from Walter, Craig?
Walter says, "Hello, Reza and Craig. I'm glad to greet you." Is that a bit formal? I'm glad to greet you. It sounds
it's
unusual.
Not wrong.
It's not wrong, is it?
It's just strange. Yeah,
a little bit
old-fashioned, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah. I would say I'm glad to be writing to you, or I'm glad to get in touch with you. The phrasal verb to get in touch. I've listened to you for a couple of months, and I've enjoyed all your podcasts. Thank you, Walter.
Thank you.
He continues, they have been so useful for me, and I hope you keep doing this great labour for a long time.
This great work, I would say.
Yeah, great work. For a long time. And then he makes a small mistake that one of my students made last week. He said, thanks you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you or thanks. So the more informal would be thanks with an S. But if you say thanks, then you don't say you. So thank you or thanks. And congratulations. By the way, is really good the idea of to get the possibility to download podcast in our devices.
Whoa, stop there.
Hold your horses, partner.
Sentence structure. This is a common mistake which Spanish speakers make, because Spanish in many ways can be more flexible than English. Luca will understand if I do say this in Spanish, Luca, just because I feel it's useful. Es realmente buena la idea de etc. He began like that. Now, in English, you wouldn't begin, is really good. No. You would begin with the idea to get the possibility to download podcast in our devices is really good. Because actually, the idea to get the possibility to download the podcast in our devices, all of that is the subject.
That's right.
It's a very long subject, but that's the subject. And then comes the verb,
Is?
Is.
And then a description. Really good. Describes the subject. Mm-hmm. So that's why it should be that order in English. Now, Spanish is more flexible. There are a couple of ways. But in English, that's the way you've got to do it. Begin generally with the subject, even if it's really long, then the verb, and then everything else.
So the correct way to say that would be the idea to get the possibility of downloading, I would say, of downloading podcasts to our devices.
Better.
Is really good.
Exactly.
Or is very good, or is wonderful, or is fantastic. So that would be at the end.
Mm-hmm. He goes on a bit more, doesn't he, Walter?
He continues to say, I will be expectant for that.
I don't think so. Unless you're going to have a baby, are you, Walter?
To
expectant mother?
Expectant mother. Yeah. I would prefer to say I will be waiting for that. I'll be waiting for it.
Expectant's usually for pregnant women, isn't
it? Yeah, she's an expectant mother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I will can hear you.
Oh,
we spoke about that in our modal episode.
Big mistake. We'll have to be hard on you in this one, Walter. Will and can never together. Never.
Will and any modal verb.
Right.
Because will is a modal verb. So I will be able. I will be able would be better. Mm-hmm. I will be able to hear you in my car while I drive or while I'm driving.
Or even I can hear you in my car. So I can hear you. You can use can to refer to the future as well as the present. Just take away will.
Yeah,
as well.
So I'll put the corrections to this, Walter, and any other listeners who are interested in the show notes at inglespodcast.com. Reza, grammar, English clauses.
English clauses, okay.
Your favourite subject.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's be honest, it's not the most exciting thing to talk about, but as I said in the last podcast, it has to be done. So, just to refresh your memories a little bit, in episode 35, we said that a phrase is a part of a sentence, but it doesn't have a subject verb. A clause is a part of a sentence, but it does have a subject verb. A sentence must have a clause, at least one clause. But as we saw in episode 35, some sentences have more than one clause. Fine. You can have one, two, three. In legal documents, sometimes you get sentences with many, many clauses. That's not common, but it's possible. But you must have at least one clause in a sentence. Okay, now, a little bit more. So a clause has a subject and a verb. Or we could say that you could divide a clause into a noun phrase and a verb phrase.
So what would be an example of a noun phrase?
Well, for example, imagine the clause, the girl smiled. That's a clause, right? We got the subject, the girl, and we got the verb, smiled, past simple verb. That's a clause. But we could divide that clause into the girl, that's the noun phrase, and the verb phrase, smiled. Now, I say verb phrase, okay, it's a verb. But you can call it a verb phrase. Here, it doesn't seem like a phrase because it's only one word, smile. So let's take an example where it's more than one word. What about this? All of my friends were watching.
Ah, here you have the auxiliary verb were, or the verb to be, with watching because it's past continuous. So then you have two words in the verb phrase.
Exactly. So were watching is the verb. That's a past continuous verb, as you say. But actually, there are two words needed to form that verb. Therefore, those two words are a verb phrase. Were watching is a verb phrase.
And the noun phrases are the subject of the sentence. So the girl is the subject of the first sentence, the girl smiled, and all of my friends is the subject of the second sentence.
Exactly. So all of my friends, noun phrase or subject, and were watching, verb phrase, or you could just say just verb. But remember, a phrase is any part of a sentence which is not a subject and verb. So a verb on its own without a subject, just the verb, that's a phrase. It's a verb phrase.
That's right.
Is that clear, do you think, Craig?
That's very clear. Crystal clear.
Okay, clear so far. But here's the thing. Most clauses have more than two parts. So we said the girl smiled. Okay, they're just two parts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's perfectly okay. But what about this? Craig wanted a cup of tea. Aha. Now we got three parts. We got Craig. That's one part. The noun phrase or the subject. We've got wanted, the verb or verb phrase, if you like. And then we got a third part now. A cup of tea. A cup of tea. What would we call that, Craig?
We'd call that the object, Reza.
Okay. So a clause can have a subject and verb and object. Sometimes there's an object. Sometimes there's not. It depends on the verb. It depends on what you want to say. Here's another example. Reza, that's our subject or our noun phrase, has eaten. That's our verb phrase, or you can say just verb, if you like. And a third part, too many potatoes. That's our object. Which is another noun phrase. So, too many potatoes is a noun phrase. In this case, it's the object. The girl smiled. The girl was a noun phrase, but it was the subject. So, noun phrases can be subjects or objects. Here's another one. This cake, that's our subject. Noun phrase. Tastes, that's our verb or verb phrase if you prefer. And awesome. Now this is interesting. The word awesome is an adjective.
And a very American adjective.
Yeah, I should do the voice, shouldn't I? This cake tastes awesome, man.
It's awesome, it's man.
It's awesome, man.
It's really awesome,
it's
man.
It's awesome, man. True that. True that. I copy that for you.
No. Listen. True that.
True that.
Yeah,
true that, man.
You're getting there.
This cake tastes awesome. So awesome is an adjective. This cake tastes awesome. This cake is the subject and it's a noun phrase. Then tastes is the verb or verb phrase, if you prefer. And then awesome is not a noun phrase because it is not the object. It's an adjective. It's actually not a noun phrase. It's what we call a complement. It describes the subject. It's an adjective, but it could be a phrase.
It's describing the cake. It's saying how wonderful the cake is.
Uh-huh. Now, here's where, if Spanish people read grammar books, they can get into big problems. So, Luca, forgive us for using a bit of Spanish here, but we better. This cake tastes awesome. Awesome in English is called a compliment, but it is not complemento in Spanish.
No.
It is not. Do not translate it as that. Complemento in Spanish is how you say object. It's very confusing. But in English, the complement is, in this case, the word awesome. Another part of the phrase or sentence which describes the subject or goes with the subject. Okay? I'll give you another one. Craig is the best teacher in Valencia.
That's true.
Craig, it's true, isn't
it? I agree with that.
We like to use true 100%.
Examples. That's awesome, Reza.
Craig, thanks. True that.
Awesome example.
Was it true that?
True that.
Okay. So Craig is the best teacher in Valencia. Craig, subject, is verb. The best teacher in Valencia. It's not the object because the best teacher in Valencia is Craig. It's the same person, same thing. So the best teacher in Valencia is the compliment. Not complemento. No. Compliment. Not complemento in Spanish. Forget about that. It's not an object.
Let me throw another example at you to dissect. He put the beer in the fridge. Mm-hmm. He is the subject.
Yep.
Or the noun phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Put, the verb phrase. To put is the verb. The beer, the object.
Yeah.
In the fridge. Which is another noun phrase. In the fridge. What would that be?
It's another noun phrase.
Another noun phrase.
Because we got a noun, fridge, in the fridge. But it's not an object or anything like that. What would we call it? It's added information. It's a phrase. A prepositional phrase.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a preposition in the phrase. It's got a preposition
It's got a cold preposition
in the fridge. We could call it a prepositional phrase. Or we could call it a noun phrase. Or why not combine the two? It's a prepositional noun phrase if you really want to know.
Yes, absolutely.
But listeners, don't get too obsessed with that. Don't get too obsessed with prepositional noun phrases. It's not worth it. The most important thing is to worry about subjects, verbs, and objects.
That's right. It's not important to learn all of these descriptive words and how to describe pieces of grammar, but we think it is important to know that the order of noun phrases, verb phrases, is a little stricter in English right. than it is in Spanish. So it's important to identify these groups of words and get them in the right order.
Exactly, because Spanish is so rich that you think English has the same flexibility, but it doesn't.
No.
It doesn't. In English, it's got to be, apart from a few exceptions, first subject, which could be a noun phrase, or it could be just one word, just one noun. Then verb, which might be just one word, like past simple smiled, or it could be a verb phrase, like he was watching. And then, if there's an object, object. Which could be just one word, like book, or it could be a noun phrase like an interesting book.
Right.
And then after that, other stuff, like in the fridge, yesterday, or when I was having my dinner, other stuff generally goes next. This I'm calling it, not a very technical word, other stuff, otras cosas.
Cositas. Just try and remember that English grammar is a bit like your very strict parents. Mm-hmm. And Spanish grammar is a little like your Auntie Mary, your Tia Maria, who used to let you smoke and drink in the house and was a lot more flexible.
Yeah. But very cultured. But
very bohemian and open-minded, so you can change the order of the words a lot. So Reza, is this a hard and fast rule that's always true, or are there any exceptions in English where you can change the order of the noun phrase and the verb phrase in a sentence?
Well, as everybody knows, Craig, there are always exceptions. But my advice is, until you get to an extremely high level of English, consider it the pattern that you should follow. But let's not lie to our listeners. Yeah, there are exceptions. For example, poor though I am, I'm very happy. I began with an adjective, poor though I am. So I began with an adjective. I didn't begin with subject verb.
And that's for emphasis, is it?
To emphasize the word poor.
To change the order.
Mm. Exactly. It's called inversion. But let's not get obsessed with that. As I say, that's only for very, very, very high levels. So yeah, there are exceptions. But on the whole, it's best to stick to first subject, then verb, then if there is one, object.
Yeah. And remember that English clauses always have a subject. For example, Pepito has got a new job. You cannot say, as you can in Spanish, and we said at the beginning of the episode, is a graphic designer, like you could say in Spanish, es un diseñador gráfico.
Or soy profesor.
You have to say he is a graphic designer. So Pepito has got a new job, full stop. He is a graphic designer.
How would you say in English, soy profesor?
I'm a teacher.
Yeah. It's not typical when you describe your job in Spanish to say yo. You don't normally say it. But in English, you must say. And also in Spanish, by the way, you don't say un, just two words, soy profesor. But in English, you must say I am or I'm. We must have a subject and a verb to have a clause, to have a sentence, I'm. And then the object is a noun phrase, a teacher. To say only teacher is not correct. A teacher, noun phrase. So we need four words in English to your two words in Spanish.
That's right. Professions always have an article. So if it's a or an, if it begins with a vowel sound, an accountant, you'd need an article with a profession. Another example, he's waiting for his girlfriend. Is late is not correct, as you possibly might say or translate from Spanish. You have to say she is late. So he's waiting for his girlfriend. She is late.
Have you noticed, listeners, that very often we guiris, or as you say in South America, gringos, whenever we are listening to Spanish, very often we honestly don't know who you're talking about. Your Spanish, of course, is perfectly correct, but it's our fault because we are so used to always hearing subjects Yet in Spanish, you don't have to give a subject. Quite often, Craig, I find myself getting confused when somebody say,
es muy buena persona.
Él hacía no sé qué, y luego ella no sé qué, y luego está, pues llegó tarde, and I'm like, llegó, hold on, él o ella, I kind of get lost, you know what I mean?
Yeah, me too.
Whereas for a Spanish person, it's always very clear, that I'm talking about him, it's clear from the context, but in English, because we're so used to hearing, he did this, and then he, that when we don't hear it in Spanish, we kind of get confused.
I'm pleased you said that because I thought it was my bad Spanish, but it is confusing for an English speaker to not have that subject he or she or the name of the person.
Mm-hmm. There's one thing I wanted to mention, Craig.
Yes.
We said that remember your subject and verb when you're going to make a sentence in English. Of course, there is a special case, imperatives, orders, when you're telling people to do things like listen.
Right.
Which could be, escucha.
Come here. Do
all
that. Go there.
There's no subject. We just use the verb, listen, or come here. Okay, we got another word here, but there's no subject. It's just the verb come, come here.
And if we have no other subject, we can use there or it as the subject. Mm-hmm. For example, there were loads of people at the party, or there were a lot of people at the party, or there won't be much traffic at 6 a.m. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You've got this great word in Spanish to cover it. Ay. There is a lot of traffic. Ay. Mucho tráfico. But in English, you've got to give it a subject. So as Craig says, there is. But then the problem is, ay in Spanish is singular or plural. But in English, you've got to change the verb. Hay mucho tráfico. There is. Pero hay muchos libros. There are. Because books are plural.
So translate these for me. Es un día bonito. Es un día perfecto.
It's a lovely day.
It's a lovely
day. Perfect day.
It's a beautiful day.
Okay. So we're talking about a day. So a day is a thing. So we've got to add the subject. It.
Me molesta. Me molesta mucho.
It bothers me.
It bothers me. It really bothers me. You must have the it as the subject.
It, the thing that you're doing or the thing that you're talking about, it bothers me. What about this one, Craig? Translate this into English. You've asked me for the time. Son las dos y media.
It's 2:30.
Yeah. It's 2:30. It means the time. There's a tricky one because in Spanish, son.
It's plural.
Son las dos. But in English, the time is always singular because we think the time, it.
And the time is the subject of the sentence, so it must be it.
It.
It's just gone 11:30 or mm-hmm. It's 2:30. Exactly.
A typical thing, listeners, have you noticed? Another thing that guiris and gringos do, it's typical for us to say when we speak bad Spanish, you ask us, ¿qué hora es? And if a gringo answers you or a guiri, they say, es la dos y media. Should be son las dos y media. That's our mistake.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we're thinking English, it's, you see.
Okay, moving on to pronunciation, and I have three more words that could be problematic, could cause problems for Spanish speakers, because I've heard Spanish speakers making mistakes with good and would or would. So because would, the pronunciation would, can have two spellings and two meanings. Would can be madera, and would could be the conditional would. Would you like some tea, or would you like some cake? And the problem, I think, comes from the throat, la garganta, because when people say would, I would like, it sometimes comes more from the throat and it sounds like a g, g. And if you put your hand, if you cover your throat, put your hand on your throat or on the top of your head and you say g, you should feel vibration. You should feel some vibration of your vocal cords. G, g. Now that is the sound you want for good, but that is not the sound you need for would, because would comes only from the mouth, from the lips. So try to concentrate on not having any vibration, not speaking from the throat with the W of would. Just the lips, w, 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 w. Just putting your lips together and open, w, 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 and the sound is would. Would you like some more tea? Would you like to have a pizza?
Craig, can I throw another word into the mix?
Throw away.
The word could.
That is could that a prob- and good is and that would. A problem with your students, the confusion of could?
Could and would and good, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I find it, they mix it up. Because if you think about it, for the word could and the word good, the mouth does exactly the same.
Could and good.
The only difference is one is voiced and one is unvoiced.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, your mouth does the same. Could, good. Good has the vibration. Could doesn't have the vibration.
That's right. So try this at home. Try this now. Just put your hand across your throat.
Don't squeeze too hard, though. This isn't a suicide podcast. Don't squeeze hard.
Your throat, not your wife or your husband's throat. And just say would, and you shouldn't be feeling, you should not be feeling any vibrations. Just from the mouth, just from the lips. Would.
You know, Craig, I was talking about this just last night in class, and I was telling my class, listen, don't get angry with me, but the world's a sexist place. I don't invent the rules. I'm just the messenger, I said. Don't shoot the messenger. But it's easier for men than women. I'm sorry, but it's true. To feel this vibration in your throat,
it's easier for men.
Because their Adam's apple is bigger. It's
okay.
Easier. It's a scientific fact. Because men have more pronounced Adam's apples. That's why they're called Adam's apples.
Do they say the same in Spanish? Is it la manzana de Adam?
No, they don't. They say la nuez.
La nuez.
Yeah.
La nuez.
Your voice box where your vocal cords vibrate.
Mm-hmm.
Men's are bigger. They're more pronounced. Women have them. So it is easier for a man to feel this vibration than a woman. It's a scientific fact. I'm sorry, ladies.
Well, ladies, if you are having problems finding your vibration, put your hand on the top of your head and you should... You should feel the vibration coming up through the bone in your head when you say would. When you say good. And when you pronounce those sounds that have vocal cord vibrations. Anything else?
By the way, would you pronounce the words W-O-O-D and W-O-U-L-D the same?
Yeah. Would you?
Yes.
Good. That's a relief. We're on the same page with that one.
But what would. About...
Yes, I would.
Yeah, it's something that I often query because of my lack of expertise here. You know the short ooh sound and the long ooh sound? For example, put is a short sound, I believe, right? Whereas is boot the long sound?
There isn't a long sound of put.
Yeah, exactly. So... The word boot, as in bota.
Ooh.
For your foot.
That's a long sound, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
In Belfast, no difference.
Really?
Another regional variation. In Belfast, there is no long sound. They're all short.
So how would you say shoe?
Shoe.
Zapata. Shoe. That's long.
Yeah, but you say it.
Shoe.
Shoe.
Same.
Why am I saying it as long as you, though? I think I'm saying it shorter than you. Shoe.
Shoe. Moving on to vocabulary and a few words about the car. El coche or el carro, if you're from Latin America.
Or even la máquina.
Or even la máquina that we mentioned a couple of episodes ago. The glass at the front of the car is not called the same in British English as in American English. In Britain,
I didn't know that. It's not called the windscreen.
Well, we would tend to say the windscreen. One word, windscreen. But our American cousins would probably say windshield.
Oh, right.
Same idea. It's protecting you from the wind. So it's shielding you from the wind in America, windshield. Or it's screening you from the wind, which is very similar.
Sure.
Windscreen.
I have windscreen. Heard it. Now I remember, yeah.
And the name of the rubber cleaners that... The two cleaners that clean or remove the rain from the windscreen?
Windscreen wipers?
Windscreen wipers, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess in America then windshield wipers.
Exactly. Basically. I would think so. Yes, yes, they are.
Can I just show off, Luca, forgive me, because I'm so proud of knowing this word in Spanish because so many giddies don't.
Limpia parabrisas.
We both know it. Toma. We're good, aren't we? Limpia parabrisas. What a brilliant word. So many Guineas don't know that word, but Craig and I do. We're Limpia getting better.
What he says.
We're getting better.
That's right. When you want to stop a car racer, you put your foot on the...
brake.
Correct, the brake.
And is that B-R-E-A-K?
No, that's the scansor. B-R-A-K-E. Same pronunciation, mm-hmm. brake. And it's also a verb. So you put your foot on the brake, that's the noun, or you brake when you want to stop. And sometimes you stop permanently and you pull up the handbrake, which is same in Spanish.
Pull up the handbrake if it's a European car.
That's right.
Because it'll be... it'll come through the floor of the car and you have to pull it up. But if it's an American car, it'll probably be behind the steering wheel.
Or even if it's because American cars are usually automatic, yep. they're not manual, so you don't change gears. Mm-hmm. An American car, you'd probably put it in park. Just P for park.
It's part of the transmission box.
That's right, and that will be the brake.
Do they not still have the brake behind steering wheels in some American cars, or is that a bit old-fashioned now?
I think that... I'm not sure, but I think that's a bit old-fashioned now. Yeah. I think they tend to have them now down by the side of you. I rented a car during my recent trip, and it wasn't automatic. It was manual, and it had a handbrake next to the seat. But when you change gear in a manual car, you use the...
gear lever.
Clutch.
You're
right.
All right.
No, you're right. Sorry.
Okay.
You use both, hopefully.
You use both.
Hopefully. Coordinating them, yeah.
If you don't want a loud noise, you'd use both. You'd use the gear lever.
It's very well using the clutch, but if you don't touch the gear lever, you're not going to change gear, right?
That's right. That's right. You're absolutely right. So you'd use the gear lever.
You put your foot on the clutch first.
Correct.
And then you change gears using the gear lever, right?
And then you take your foot off the clutch. The phrasal verb to take off and the object in the middle. You take your foot off the clutch. But if you want to go faster, you would put your foot on the...
accelerator.
Yes. Or in America, you'd hit the gas. Hit the gas, man.
Well, there's another useful thing, yeah, you've mentioned. In America, in colloquial, informal English, they say gas. That's what goes into your car. Not in British English. In British English, it's petrol.
That's right, yeah, petrol. Petrol station, gas station.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. For British, or indeed Irish, speakers of English, gas is, as the name suggests, a gas. It's not a liquid. Whereas in American English, gas is short for gasoline, which is a liquid,
mm-hmm.
petrol. So that's very confusing.
Another couple of differences come to mind. The front of the car, the cover for the engine in British English is the bonnet. Do you know the American word for the bonnet?
Oh, hold on. Give me a minute. What is it? The hood?
Yes, the hood. Yeah. So you'd lift up the bonnet to check the engine, but in America you'd lift up the hood. And the reverse, the back of the car, where you put your suitcases and your luggage, you'd put that in the boot in the UK, but in America...
The trunk.
The trunk of the car is the bagage. And finally, one more, to be safe, because safety first, before you drive, before you... start to drive the car, you need to put on your seatbelt.
Seatbelt.
Which in Spanish would be...
cinturón de seguridad.
Cinturón de seguridad, your seatbelt. So remember, if you're driving anywhere, put on your seatbelt. I think that's it.
Put on, or we could use the verb fasten.
Fasten. Fasten your seatbelt. That's better, actually, yeah.
Well, both are correct, but...
fasten your seatbelt.
They always use fasten when they give the demonstration on a plane. You've also got a seatbelt on a plane.
Yes.
And they say, fasten your seatbelts for takeoff and landing.
Make sure your seatbelts are securely fastened. Tire is another word that's useful to change the tire, rueda. So if you have a puncture, a pinchazo, or ponchadura in Mexico...
Oh, really?
Then you, okay. Ponchadura, yeah. Okay. You have to change your tyre if you get a puncture.
Now, Craig, to change the tyre, you're probably going to have to elevate the car. How do you do that? What do you use to elevate it?
Our good friend Jack, J-A-C-K, jack the car. It's also a verb, to jack up the car, is to raise or lift the car so that you can change the tyre. Mm-hmm. Another useful word, headlights. You must use your headlights when it gets dark, and headlights in Spanish would be...
Faro.
Faro, yeah. The headlights. And finally, to make a noise, beep, beep, you'd use your hooter in the UK.
Or horn as well.
The horn... Wouldn't horn be more US?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
What would you say if you... Would you say hooter or horn?
I would say horn, actually.
Okay, okay.
But maybe it is more American, I don't know. Okay.
So, yeah, hooter or horn, both acceptable, which is claxon in Spanish. And it's also a verb to hoot someone. He hooted me, or he blew his horn.
Can I just add one more thing? When you want to turn left and right, in Valencia you probably do nothing. You just turn left
or
right.
No, you just turn left or
but
right.
In
you
Nordic would,
you
countries...
You wouldn't let anybody know before.
Don't let anybody know. No. Don't give them too much information. Just turn left and right, capriciously and without warning.
Doesn't matter.
But in Sweden or Germany or Denmark, when you're going to turn left or right, you had better... Put on your indicators.
To indicate if you're turning left or to indicate turning right so that people behind know where you're going.
Intermitentes.
Terrible in Spain. Indicators. They really are terrible. Anyway, that's all we have time for on this episode. So thank you very much, Reza, my co-host. And please remember to send us an email or a sound file, un mensaje de voz en MP3, with a comment or question. And you can send your emails or sounds, your recorded sounds, to craig@inglespodcast.com or to reza@belfastreza@gmail.com. And if you do get in touch, we'd love to hear from you. And please try to answer these two questions if you can. Number one, how did you find us? How did you find our show? Did you find us on iTunes? Did you find us via Google, etc.? Did someone recommend our show to you? And number two, what would you like us to talk about on the show? We would love to hear from you to know how to plan and arrange future episode, so please tell us what you would like and we will try to do it for you. You can find more podcasts at inglespodcast.com and study English free at mansioningles.com. The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later and it's licensed by Creative Commons under a by NC license at ccmixter.org. So thanks again for listening, and until next time, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from Craig.
Goodbye.
You can now leave us a voice message on the homepage at inglespodcast.com. Just click the orange button and leave your message, which should be no longer than 90 seconds.